ladies and gentlemen, I'm a complete idiot. I mean, I have two good friends from high school. Sorry, welcome to We Love No Other. A podcast, question mark, from IlliniBoard.com, period. I have some good friends from high school, and I remember asking them, like, I don't know, when I was like 23 years old, like, am I a klutz? And then, you know, they both burst into laughter of like, we love you, you're a complete klutz. So, I'm going to begin this podcast question mark from the highway, driving back from Ohio State. I'm going to begin with a story of how much of an idiot I am. So, I go to the game last night. Go have a beer with a guy afterwards. Grab some food because I didn't eat before I got to Columbus. Get back to my hotel. Got to my hotel for the first time at around 10:45 Eastern, something like that. Game got over at 9 Eastern time. Park the car, go in, check into my hotel, write the article, go to bed, get up, wear my orange shirt to breakfast, go back to my room, pack my stuff, get ready to go to Champaign, go out to the parking lot, and where's my rental car? I look for it, I look where I parked, I walk around a bit, I'm like, I swear, I parked on this end right here, I'm like, did I? No. I hit the button in my pocket on the little key fob for the rental car. Nothing. And so I go back inside and I tell the lady at the front desk, I'm like, did you tow any cars overnight? Like, it's not a handicapped spot. Like, I don't know what's happening, but the car I rented is not there. She asked what kind of car. I said it's a red Nissan Altima. The other lady, I think the manager maybe, she's like, we have security cameras, let me go review the footage. So, talking to the other front desk, she gives me the non-emergency number for Columbus Police. So, I call the police department and say, yeah, my rental car's not here. They say it wasn't towed. I guess it was stolen. I don't know. And so they send, okay, we'll send a cruiser out. I'm like, well, this is a rental car from Hertz. I better call Hertz and tell them, hey, your rental car, you know, the woman behind the counter was like, hey, you know, those have low jack. I don't think I even know what low jack means. She's like, they have low jack. They should be able to trace it if it's a rental car. I'm like, oh, I don't know what that means, but okay. So I call Hertz. And I talk to the first person, they're like, you have to talk to the roadside and emergency department. They handle those things. I talk to that department. The guy's like, do you have the license plate? I'm like, I think it's on the key fob. So I give him the license plate. He enters it in. He's like, yeah, okay, we've got that. It's the black Altima. And I'm like, no, it's red. He's like, oh, I'll change that in the system. And I have this feeling of like, oh, dear God. My rental car for my last road trip was red. Is this one black? Did I not look for the right car? But I'm like, no, I hit the button, I beeped, nothing was there. No. And so, I go back outside. I look at the key fob this time. I hit the lock button. This is while I'm on the phone with Hertz. And beep, beep, there it is. Just a couple spots down from where I was standing looking. It's a black Altima, not a red Altima. And I have to call the cops. I have to go inside and tell the woman, stop reviewing the tape, I'm an idiot. So the what of what happened is that this key fob has an extra button on the front for, I guess, remote start. It has like a little circle with an arrow. I think that's remote start, right? I've never had it. And when you hit it, nothing happens. So I thought I was hitting the lock button looking for the car. I was hitting the remote start button. I don't know if you have to hold it down to get remote start, or maybe this car just doesn't have remote start. I don't know. Doesn't matter. I was hitting a button and nothing was happening. Didn't look at the key fob. Just assumed it was my own key fob from home or something. And, yeah. I was hitting that button standing, I don't know, 20 feet from the car. Closer than that. And thinking my car was in this one spot when it wasn't, and no beep. And so, yep, I'm an idiot. So now, this is the worst part. The manager had gone back to review the tape. I call the police. I'm on the phone with Hertz. The other woman is giving me updates there in the lobby. She's like, she got to 5 a.m. and, you know, or first update was like, she saw you pull in last night. Yeah, you got here a little before 11, something like that. Then it was like, she's reviewing, she's almost to daylight, so that's good. We might be able to see a face of somebody. And then she gave me one more. She's like, I think she's almost to 7 a.m. now. And this is when I'm calling Hertz. And then there were no updates from the woman who kept going back and checking and this and that. So after all of this, I realize, like, that woman went back, reviewed the tape, fast forwarded, saw me pull in, lock the car, saw me go inside, and then the next thing she knows is I'm reporting it stolen. So now she probably thinks, oh, what do we have to do? This guy's a scammer. He's trying to report a car that's obviously here as a stolen car. And the cops are on their way. And when the cops ask to see this, what do I do? Like, she didn't tell me any of this. I'm just assuming that I stopped getting updates because she got all the way to current. And the car that she saw me get out of was sitting right there. And she really wasn't sure what to say to me. So maybe she was just staying in the back room until the cops showed up. Just to be like, officer, can I speak to you for a moment? Yeah, the car's right there. I don't know what he's talking about. God, I'm an idiot. Just such a complete, total moron. Part of the blame... God, this is going to be great. Part of the blame I am placing on the campus of Ohio State University. If you've been to Ohio State, you know they like uplight a lot of their dorms with red lights. And they have some lights outside of Value City that are reddish. So there's kind of a reddish glow everywhere. They kind of are going for that, like a glow around campus. What I believe reinforced my belief that I had rented a red car was the when I was walking out to the parking lot last night in a dimly lit parking lot, hitting the button until I finally found the car, there was a bit of a red glow to it. That's the only thing I could come up with of like, I swear last night I got into a red car in the parking lot. It might just be a black car in a dark parking lot with a red glow in the air, and it was kind of foggy, so it was like you walk outside and like the whole area was red. It's actually kind of a cool effect on their campus. But it's very similar to Michigan State, what they do. But it's just like, that's the only way I can go, because I know last night I clicked in my brain that the rental car was red. Like, that's the moment that I had that feeling. And the plates on the rental car are from Wisconsin, so I'm like, maybe that, like, subconsciously, oh, Wisconsin, red car. Maybe. I'm trying to figure out how I'm an idiot. But just know, I'm a complete and total idiot. It's unbelievable. The cop shows up. I'm like, sir, I am so sorry you had to drive all the way out here. because of a moron who didn't remember what color his rental car was and didn't hit the right button on his key fob. I'm very sorry that there are several holes in the Swiss cheese, and I lined them all up in order to report to you that my rental car was stolen when it's sitting right here the whole time. And I tweeted it. Oh, drama queen. Like, seriously, I tweeted it. Oh, my rental car was stolen. So, but yeah, this is me coming to you from the highway. From the highway where I'm in my rental car, which is a black Nissan Altima with Wisconsin plates. Okay, I put questions out on Twitter to do a highway pod. And I said, even if you want to know other stories of how I'm an idiot, I haven't looked to see if anyone asked that question. But, I mean, I loaded one up in my mind, so I might as well tell you, right? I may have told this story before on a podcast. If you're wondering if I'm an idiot, here you go. I was at my desk at work. This is 20 plus years ago. Maybe late 90s, early 2000s. Let's say it was like 2001 or so, something like that, 2002. I'm at my desk at work. It's after work. I'm the only one there. I was the quote unquote manager of my slow pitch softball team at the time, which was nothing more than, this was even before they had the phone number you call in for a rainout. They would just call the manager, and then that guy had to call everybody else to say, hey, it's rained out tonight. So I have a list of softball guys' phone numbers. It's just this like master list of everyone's phone number. And I am calling each person to say, hey, the game's rained out. And then I just go to the next number and dial that. I go to the next number, and I dial that. As I'm doing that, my cell phone rings. I have dialed one number, and I'm leaving mostly voicemails, as I recall. People aren't answering, so I'm just saying, hey, game's rained out. So while that phone is ringing in my ear, I'm like, I bet I can answer this real quick. This is before caller ID on cell phones, anything else. So I'm like, I can just answer that real quick. I'm like, hey, can I call you back? I got the phone's ringing. My work phone is ringing in my other ear here. So I have work phone in my left ear. I put my cell phone in the right ear and answer the call. And when I answer the call, I hear hello in my left ear. And I'm like, oh crap! Now, whichever guy I called next, that guy is, I have to talk to him. But the other one, like, I'm like, oh, I'm on two calls here now, right? I have answered one call, and that person hasn't said anything yet. And I heard a hello in my other ear. So I say hello to that person, and I hear a hello in my right ear. And I'm like, oh man, now I am talking to two people. And this was a dumb idea to try to answer this call. And so I give it in real time, it was hello, 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 hello. I had called myself. I had gone down the list and called my own cell number because it was on the list. I didn't realize I was dialing my own cell number. I called myself. When I answered my cell phone, it was me calling me. I hear a hello, and I don't recognize my voice. So I say hello to that person. And I give it a hello, hello, hello. Oh. And I realize what had just happened. Thankfully, nobody's around. I hang up both phones. I live in my shame. And I move forward. And I answer the rest of the calls. And we're good. That's how dumb I am, people. If you think I'm a smart guy, I like try to do the whole, like, look, man, I'm a creative. I play the piano. I sang in high school. I'm different. I'm not organized. I'm free. But really, I'm just a klutz. Like, I don't think ahead. And I get, you know, how many times have we talked about this? Like, I mean, I've written about trying to find my way to press boxes, figure out directions from parking lots into, like, that time I got lost at Iowa basketball because I walked around back. It's that big hill because the entire arena is dug into the side of a hill, and now I'm stuck in a spot where I couldn't get in, and I didn't see a single play in the first 14 minutes of the game. I'm just that guy, okay? I've accepted it. I'm 51 years old. I know I'm that guy. But make no mistake whatsoever, I am an idiot. An idiot. Okay, let's get to Illini questions, right? How far are we in here? 16 and a half minutes, and I haven't talked one single Illini thing. Okay, so I'm just driving down 70 here, straight on through Dayton to Indy to Champaign. So I've got nothing better to do. Why not answer some questions? So I asked for your questions. I guess I should probably go to that original. I know before, so I put up a call for questions. Then I like canceled it on Twitter. I'm like, check that. My rental car was stolen. So much for answering questions today. I don't even have a car to drive back to Champaign. And then I put up another thread of like, okay, I'm an idiot. Here's this. Let's start over here. Do you have any questions? So let me go to the original one and see if there are any questions within that one. Okay, 4.5 hour drive back to Champaign. Okay, here we go. Shout out to the original OGs who got into this. Who would you like to see as the new linebacker and wide receiver coaches? And who are some of the best position coaches, not coordinators, Illinois has had in the last 20 years, in your opinion? Man, that's a hard... Like, first, who would you like to see? I feel like that question is impossible to answer. Like, if there's a head coach search, Vegas will do odds on it, and somebody's going to be kind of the odds-on favorite. If Vegas were doing odds on who would be the next Illinois linebacker coach, there wouldn't be a single person inside, like, 50 to 1. Like, there's no favorites. There's no, like, it's going to be a random or, I mean, everybody's saying John Holosek because he's a alum. He left Loyola last year. Sounded like he was done with coaching, but I don't know. Maybe he wants to get into college coaching. So I would say that answer, but just like the Gibbs hire, it's going to be somebody who we've not considered or heard of before. I usually just wait with those things to say. I will say it would be preferable George McDonald's a really good recruiter, so we need some recruiters. Thad Ward is there as a recruiter, but we probably need at least one of those positions filled by somebody whose strength is on the recruiting side. But I don't really have any favorites. I don't have anybody of like, let's go get that guy. I kind of just wait to see. I know it's the old man dumb answer, but I just kind of wait to see that. as far as the second question is concerned, best position coaches, let me think for a second and take a drink. Let's forget there's an Urbana, Ohio. I'm driving past Urbana or Ohio right now. You know, it's so hard to, it's really hard to say who was, like, the wide receivers took a big step forward. Is that because of the position coach? Is that because of a new coordinator and the receivers fit in that scheme? Is that because suddenly we had, like, two juniors and a senior and that really helped us, you know, with drops, that type of thing? It's really hard to say. How do I say that? If a new coach is hired and you read his bio, it will be like he was the Western Michigan outside linebackers coach in 2013 and helped so-and-so to a second team all-conference, or, you know, when he was the tight ends coach at Nevada for that 1 year, his tight end was drafted in the sixth round. Like, I read those and I'm like, there's no way to determine whether that person made the tight end so much better or whether that person just happened to take the Nevada tight end job when they had an NFL athlete on the roster. So it's really hard to say, like, this guy, great position coach. Because most of the time when people say that, it means this guy, great athletes at that position. Three of them were drafted. Now, is development better and worse for some? You know, were wide receiver drops a huge issue 1 year? And then, what year was that? 2015, we had so many drops or whatever. And then, you know, the issue was fixed the next year? Sure. There are individual things that you can say, boy, this position coach really improved that. But it's really hard to say who was a quality assistant because we don't have anything, or we haven't had anything like an Iowa or Wisconsin or whatever, where a certain assistant is there for 10 years and that group is just consistently good every year. As an Illinois football fan, we have gone through so many assistants, so many head coaches just rolled through that there just aren't those, hey, he's been here forever kind of guys to know how he's developed that position over the long term. I think maybe the first name that comes to mind is Eric Wolford, offensive line. I think, God, where was he? Alabama last year or somewhere? Like, he's really gone on to have, you know, well, we had Harry Easton. Like, we've had some great offensive line coaches in the past. Those are the first ones that come to mind. We've had some great recruiters in the past, and that, you know, if that makes a good assistant. But there's nobody that, I'm just being honest, there's nobody that immediately comes to mind of like, boy, that guy knew exactly what he was doing, because there's all these other factors involved in, you know, what you see happen when the new coach takes. I mean, look, Bill Cubitt took over the offense. We're talking about coordinators here. He took over the offense in 2013. Nobody remembers this now, but everyone thought Bill Cubitt was an offensive genius. We saw what the 2012 season was like. We get back, Shielhaus is a senior. We move guys like Steve Hull and Miles Osei to wide receiver. We say, hey, you guys have been here 4 or 5 years all together. You've got great chemistry. Let's build a passing offense out of that. And we did it, and it looked better, and it was improved. And everybody's like, this Cuba guy, genius! And then he never got anywhere close to it. After the 2015 season, somehow was extended when the offense was the problem that year. Well, we don't have to relitigate that. I'm just saying the players, and it's usually having upperclassmen, talented upperclassmen with experience. That's what makes people say that's a great assistant coach, and that's not. I don't think I know football enough. Maybe this is a question for Craig. I don't think I know football enough to say, hey, the footwork technique that Bart Miller teaches is far superior to Bob McLean. We know Bart Miller has better offensive lines than Bob McLean, but I don't think I have the expertise to say here's exactly why, and here are the great coaches, and here are the subpar coaches. That's a lot of words to say. Once again, I'm an idiot. I don't know. I'm just saying some words here. I don't know football well enough. That made me laugh. Oh, wait. I got to watch here. When does that speed limit go down around Dayton? No, I don't think it's happened yet. Okay. How is Northwestern a quad one loss and a quad two win? Okay, that's pretty easy to answer. So the quads go based on where the game is. So you hear about quad one all the time. Those are the wins that really move your seeding up. We had 12 quad one wins in the 2021 season, and that's what led us to a one seed. Quad one wins vary based on where the game is played. So if you beat a team in the top 30 of the net rankings at home, that's a quad one win. If they're 31 and you beat them at home, that's a quad two win in the committee's eyes. If you beat a top 50 team in the net rankings on a neutral floor, that's a quad one win. And if you beat a top 75 team, as we did last night, Ohio State is 72 this morning in the net rankings, that's a quad one win. So top 30 at home, top 50 on a neutral court, Maui Invitational, the Missouri game, that type of thing, and top 75 on the road. So for Northwestern, we beat them at home, but if you beat a team that's above 30 at home, that's quad two. And we lost to them on the road, which would have been a quad one win had Damask's shot gone down. Anybody else during the game last night when Damask made that shot from the same spot in the lane? This is about a minute and a half to go, maybe. He made a shot from like the exact same shot he took, banked it in. Why couldn't that shot have gone in at Northwestern and not gone in last night? That just still eats at me. Anyway, so that's how it works. So the committee is basically saying it's a lot easier to win at home than on the road. We're not that impressed if you beat number 35 at home, but we're really impressed if you beat number 35 on the road. So that's what the net rankings exist for. They use them almost in the inverse. They want to see who you beat. So they rank the teams. Don't really look at those rankings as like, oh, this is number 10, so they should be a 3 seed. They look at them as, okay, how many quad one wins you have, how many quad two wins you have, and did you have any bad losses in quad three and quad four? So it's all about where the game is played. I think quad two goes up to like 135 on the road, something like that. So each of the quads has different brackets for whether it's a home win, a neutral win, or a road win. Okay, let's move on. I love Coleman, but do you think the T and Underwood's post-game comment will change his mannerisms during a game? Great question. First thought is if you had a honest moment, a side moment with Brad Underwood, I think he would be glad that the technical happened last night. Feels like it's been coming, at least. Opposing crowds believe it is. Like, the Purdue crowd wanted a T on Coleman. The Michigan crowd wanted a T on Coleman. The Northwestern crowd wanted a T on Coleman. Like, opposing crowds have wanted his after-a-foul mannerisms to be teed up. So maybe in that sense it was coming. And I think Underwood would be very glad that it happened in a game we won by 12 instead of a game that was in overtime or something. But will it change? I don't know. Like, okay, this is personal Robert theory. This is not something I've heard, not something I'm reporting, not something, none of that. This is just, that's interesting. I feel like part of Coleman's surge as a senior is letting him run hot, for lack of a better way to say it. Like, I don't know if they're attempting to slow it down. Some people are, like, let me use a military example. It's the first thing that comes to mind. You know, there's some guy that is at boot camp and he's this, and they're really trying to break him and push him and mold him to be more pliable and less, you know, whatever. And then sometimes there's these conversations like, you know what, this is this guy's DNA, and he just runs like that, and he's probably good when he's on the edge of that. And we wouldn't do this for everyone, but we'd do this for him. And so let's maybe just let him be him. And, you know, let him play right on that edge. That's my feeling this year with Coleman. He's obviously improved. He was amazing in the Michigan game. He had a rough night last night. But I feel like they have said, you know, look, no judgment. He runs hot. He's very online. You know, he will engage with people on Twitter. He's right up there with, like, you know, questions about the refs in other games. A friend pointed out recently that he, like, immediately after we lost to Purdue, they lost, and he was, like, laughing on Twitter or put some, you know, like, he's very online, very out there, and some people are just like that. It's not some, like, look, we got 10 Big Ten games left, then the tournament, the Big Ten tournament, then the NCAA tournament. I don't think we're at some point where it'd be some lesson or something. He found out last night where the line is. He crossed it. He has to evaluate that. And that's that. There's 10 games left, and I think he's been playing well, and they want to keep him in that mindset. You know, obviously Underwood's going to say he has to know that can't cause us. No coach is going to be like, yeah, it's fine, whatever. Because he knows that you can't just, you know, not set ND boundaries. But I do have this sense that there's a, this is what it is for this season. And it's his senior year. He came back. He'll self-police it and run at the temperature he needs to run to stay competitive. Okay, one more question under that one. The ideal February for hoops is... Oh, that's from Bryce. Shout out, Bryce. Bryce once appeared on the podcast as a 10-year-old back in... What was that? 2012? Yeah, 2012. Gosh, that was 12 years ago, Bryce. Whew. Okay. Ideal February. I mean, my very first thought is that everything hinges on that Michigan State game for February. Maybe I should just, like, pull up the schedule or something, because my very first thought when I read the question is probably needs to be, I don't know, we have 7 games in the month, whatever, probably needs to be a 6-1 kind of a thing, where if you don't beat If you don't win at Michigan State, you really need to win the rest. And if you do win at Michigan State, you earned yourself a freebie, maybe. I mean, that's my first thought. I'll just pull up the schedule here as I'm going. And again, if you're concerned about this, I'm outside of Dayton. I have the cruise control set. It's just me and a bunch of tractor trailers. There are none around me. I'm not just sitting here like scrolling through this. I have my phone mounted. I'm tuning the radio. That's how I always say it. I'm not doing anything beyond tuning the radio. Our February matchups are Nebraska home, Michigan State away, as I mentioned. Michigan home, Maryland away, Penn State away, Iowa home, Minnesota home. Yeah, I think that 5-2 is the target. 6-1 is the dream. Or 6-1 is the plus goal, a stretch goal, and 7-0 is the dream. 5-2 is acceptable if you lose at Maryland and at Michigan State, but win the other road games and roll through the home games. That's fine. Look, we're up to number 5 in KenPom offense. I wrote last night that we are. Like, if you go with his adjusted offensive efficiency numbers, which is basically per 100 possessions, how many points will you score? And then he adjusts that for competition. If you blow out Eastern Illinois, those numbers don't weigh as heavy as you put up a ton of numbers on Purdue's defense, whatever. Right now, KenPom started tracking these numbers, go back to 99. It's the second best Illini offense we've watched, second only to 2005. 10 games left. 2005 numbers are after a rough and tumble tournament, after a Big Ten tournament, and after an entire Big Ten season. So you would assume that our numbers are still a little high based on, you know, what we did in the preseason, and they might drop some in these next 15 or so games. But those are the numbers right now. So when you look at that, when I see, do we have a top 5 offense in college basketball? Like, defensive issues were still there last night, and that's a whole other subject. But we covered all those defensive issues by getting to the rim, by hitting shots, by getting to the line. You know, like, it was frustrating for the Ohio State fans behind me because they would seem like they were going to make a run, and we, you know, there was a lot of "would you miss a shot, please" kind of stuff from the crowd. And so that gives us a chance to win at Michigan State. We already beat them once. Like, that gives us a chance to go 6-1 in February. I didn't count that up. I don't know if it was 7. But, yeah. Outside of that, 5-2 is the goal. 4-3 is not good. 5-2 is the goal. 6-1, stretch goal. Really think we can win one of those two at Maryland, at Michigan State, and run the table at home. 7-0 if we improved with defense would mean we are a legit threat in the tournament. Does that make sense? That makes sense. There's a car. Oh, Illinois plates. Look at that. It was desperate to get past me and exceed the speed limit by 150 miles an hour. I may have exaggerated that. I'm trying to think if that answers the question. Like, you know, ideal February. I mean, I do think 7-0 is possible. Like, we're really looking forward to that Michigan State game. We'll have 6 days off. We'll be rested after this pretty grueling stretch. You know, we only have one game between now and that game on, what is it, the 10th? Yeah. February 10th. So we have one game between now and February 10th. That's Sunday against Nebraska. Gosh. Yeah, that's a big game. That's a big game. Because we should, you know, we should win at Penn State. We better win, you know. We better beat Minnesota at home, beat Nebraska at home. Like, you know, those are, you know, as high as we're ranked right now, as high as we look in the KenPom numbers and everything else. Well, we better do that. Okay. Oh, there is one more under here. Huge assumptions. Three commits show up. Nobody transfers. Coleman and Marcus opt to come back. That's 12 solid scholarships already for next year. I guess I hadn't thought of that. Coleman could use his... Yeah, Coleman arrived in 20, so I guess he could use the 20 season as his COVID year. I don't think that's going to happen. I think this is his final year. Isn't this Marcus's COVID year, though? Okay, I can't look this up. Yeah, I feel like this is Damask using his fifth year, using that COVID year for one bonus year here at Illinois. Could be wrong on that, but that's just what's in my mind. Let me address it this way. I feel like just reading that, it feels like wishful thinking. Like, we all know, right, that next year's a step back. It's fine. You know, next year's a step back for Purdue. Like next year, we're going to lose Hawkins, Guerrier, Damask, Shannon, Harmon. We will have, theoretically, Goody, Danger, DGL, Moretti, again, I don't have a roster in front of me, but, like, of the very, very old, a bunch of 23-year-olds playing basketball lineup that we put out there a lot, I think we're going to lose those five guys. And so I don't really see anything but a step back next year. You know, you try to keep the pieces together. You know, Merez Johnson looks like he's a immediate contributor. Hansberry should take a sophomore leap. DGL should take a sophomore leap. But that's not a top 10 team next year. Like, that's a rebuilding team. Now, you're going to go to the portal and you're going to try and find more Damasks and Guerriers and Harmons, but that's not a, yeah, we're taking a step back here. Like, I'm okay with it. Like, all the more reason to go deep in the tournament this year, because we're gonna have to shuffle things and have a whole new team next year. That's fine. I'm willing to go out and find 3 fifth-year seniors this year in the portal to make a run by getting Shannon and Hawkins to come back for one more year. Think of it like the Rams trading future draft picks to try to win the Super Bowl a few years ago. Yeah, it cost them in the future, but it got them the Super Bowl. That's kind of the college version of that we're doing right now. Oh man, I'm glad I'm not going the other way, because that is a tractor trailer in one of the lanes. One lane traffic, westbound 70. Oh, I'm sorry, eastbound 70. That looks horrific. Looks like the guy went into the ditch and then kind of jackknifed as he came back out, and the cab is blocking one of the two lanes over there. And tractor trailers as far as the eye can see. Man, that sucks. I'm so glad that's that direction and not this direction. Okay, was that all of the questions in that one? Oh, no, there's another one here. Big Ten was arguably the best basketball conference a few years ago. What happened and how the conference get it back? great, 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 great question, because I was thinking about it all last night. I tweeted about the Ohio State crowd. Just a note on that. So I did the, I just took a little video, showed the crowd, got sent to one Ohio State guy. It has like, I don't know, 150,000 views or something like that at this point. I'm not saying that's, look at the numbies. I'm saying, it got picked up by Ohio State and became a thing, which told me this. Like, I guess the Ohio State media hasn't been showing them that. Like, I went back and looked. They had another game, like a non-conference game, that was a similar very low. Like, this was their lowest Big Ten attendance in a while. They sold 10,200 tickets, they said. Well, sold and gave away, but there couldn't have been 5,500 people there last night. That thing went so viral, I just thought, like, I wonder if, you know, I know that feeling as a media member of, like, what will the school think if I share this really negative thing? And I'm curious as to why Ohio State media hasn't been doing the, here's the crowd during warm-ups. Maybe last night it was the worst, but no one else seemed to have done it last night. It's just interesting to me when that information is, when I just put it on Twitter, it's shocking to Ohio State fans, and they pass it around to each other and garner that many views. I'm like, isn't this the whole story here right now? Like, why is this such a shock to people? I don't understand. And all I can assume is that nobody's really going hard on, yeah, this is bad. The fans are voting with their butts. They're not putting them in the seats. There's no noise. It's a desperate situation right now. Anyway, I say all that and I forget the question. Oh, the Big Ten right now. I mean, A, these things are cyclical. Let me use Iowa as an example, okay? Iowa did not change their recruiting to have all of these All-Americans there, okay? Iowa did not suddenly go out and start landing. Iowa was fortunate. They grabbed Luca Garza, who was, don't go to that lane. There's shoulder work ahead. Iowa grabs Luca Garza, who was like ranked right around 100 or whatever, and he turns out to be National Player of the Year, you know. The Murray brothers were legacies. Their dad played there. They played there. They went to prep school. They weren't that well known as recruits. Probably always going to Iowa to follow their dad. And they got back-to-back All-American years from the Murray brothers. That's not, I don't want to call it luck here, okay? Fran has really built something there that wasn't there with Licklider, and, you know, it's not easy to just go recruit All-Americans to Iowa. But I'll just say it's unsustainable, right? Unless they have another former player who had twins who are both NBA players and develop at different rates, so one's an All-American 1 year and then he goes NBA and then the other one, you know, unless that is going to happen again, Iowa's not going to have that level of a top 20 program consistently year in, year out. You know, Holtman, I don't want to, God, I keep teetering on the edge of the word unlucky. I don't want to say Holtman's unlucky, but he, like, all of these guys he's brought in, they were like one-year wonders and then went to the NBA. They weren't even supposed to be one-year guys, Sensabaugh, you know, that whole crowd. Like, he's been a little bit like, I'm trying to develop a program here, and getting those guys sophomore and junior years would really change things, like it did with E.J. Liddell, and all these guys are now going pro, and it's just, I'm not developing the long-term program that I thought I was going to be. And he had injury issues with guys like Towns, and you know, like some bad things happened to make that go south pretty quickly. I don't think Holtman's a bad coach, but he, like, the ingredients he has added haven't really shown much the last 24 months, so that program fell quickly. Maybe Juwan Howard is not the coach everyone, you know, maybe it's true that, you know, a lot of Michigan fans, you ask them, will say, like, he was fine with Bielon's guys, he can't find his own guys. Recruiting these one-and-dones didn't help the program, it just helped the single season, and, you know, blah, blah, blah. What, all that you hear about Juwan and Michigan. But maybe it's just that he's not Beilein, he's not a program developer and that type of thing. So all those individual situations are just hitting at once. You know, Purdue, when Michigan was on top 2, 3, 4 years ago, Purdue wasn't that great. Like, I don't want to say they were bad, but like, you know, well, Purdue had like a 16-17 season in there somewhere, and, you know, like 5 years ago or whatever, and, you know, they had to kind of rebuild around, and they, you know, made that surge again under the Jaden Ivey and that team, and then Edie is a National Player of the Year for 2 years. My point is, these things are all cyclical. I think there was a little luck involved with how everything aligned 3 years ago. Punching above, programs punching above their weight. All college basketball is like that, right? Like, Kansas State, everybody thought Jerome Tang is the future superstar of coaching. It's hard to keep doing that year after year. You know, I still have that page open. I'm going to see what Kansas State's record is. It's not just, like, fully sustainable every year. And people, like, forget. You know, there'll be a year where Xavier is number 9 and everyone is like, what? How is Xavier good and our program isn't good? Or, you know, an Ohio State fan was like, well, then the next year Xavier has a 16-17 year and you didn't think about it or hear about it. You're just hearing about the top 25 teams. You know, like, it's easy to think that so many programs are consistently on top when it's just kind of not the case and everybody has these clunkers. So, the way I see the Big Ten right now is just that it's in a downturn. That said, there is something to 4 new teams coming to join, not really with basketball traditions outside of UCLA. Not something where Washington basketball is known for top 25 teams and 15,000 fans every night, you know, that type of thing. K-State's 14-7 or 14-8 or something like that. I think they're 14-7 going into last night's game, which they lost by 20. You know, it's just, sometimes you lose some players, you got a rebuilding year, and you got to make a second surge. So I was just going through it last night with attendance. I saw what Michigan was. Iowa has had a couple games that's really empty. Like, they'll draw twice as many for women's games as men's games this year. Sometimes. Michigan, I took pictures of the crowd. Ohio State, I took that video of the crowd. There is a bit of a, you know, in my tweet I said, you know, it's consistent crowds in West Lafayette, in East Lansing, in Champaign, and in Madison. But outside of that, is there? I forgot to include Indiana. They're always going to have big crowds. But who is next attendance-wise? I think it's Nebraska. It's not Maryland. It's not, well, Rutgers has a great crowd, but they can only get 8,000 people in there. It's not Penn State. Absolutely not. It's not Ohio State. It's not Michigan. It's not Northwestern. Again, tiny arena. I think behind those five who are consistently still drawing big crowds, Indiana, Illinois, Purdue, Wisconsin, and who am I forgetting? Hold on. Illinois, Indiana, Wisconsin, Michigan State, Purdue. Beyond those five, Nebraska will probably be sixth in Big Ten attendance because they have a little surge and they've won a few games, which they haven't. It's a down period, and you're not. I mean, UCLA is not drawing huge crowds. They're a mess right now. On the road next year, 18 Big Ten teams. You might only have five schools drawing consistently more than 10K. That's an issue. That's like the Big Ten has always hung its hat on. Look at the size of the arenas. We have these large arenas because the fans always show up. And now you have so many Ohio State fans in my mentions saying, we have to go back to St. John. That building is a mistake. It's an NBA arena. There's no atmosphere. We're not going to fill it for years. Go back to St. John where there was a college atmosphere. I think you might see some more of that across college basketball. You know, we're drawing 15 a game right now. Purdue is selling out 14 a game. Like, I think programs like that are on solid foundations. Why I wrote what I wrote last night. But there's a lot of, like, if you look at the Maryland crowds, if you look at the Ohio State crowds, if you look at the Michigan crowds, you look at the Iowa crowds, it is not what it's been of the past. And I'm sure they're talking about it at the conference office. Okay. How far are we in here? I need another drink. Yeah. Should put on some hold music. Okay. Let's get to more questions. Please enjoy this hold music while I get to the questions. Keys to 6 wins in 24. I guess that's football. Volleyball coach, prove it by date in the toughest conference in America. I think the opening game is the prove it by date. Like, hasn't Chris Thomas's prove it by date expired? I can't look up the record, but Illinois should be a top 25 program in volleyball. No question. Has been in the past, was when I was there, was, you know, late 2000s, early 2010s. Hambley had it there before he left. Thomas was handed a team that he took to the Final Four. Had some injuries, have had some bad luck. They've had some, you know, players that, you know, career-ending injuries, that type of thing. It's not been great, but it, you can't just say, like, well, this year and that, like, it needs to be turned to, shouldn't be behind Purdue, shouldn't be behind Ohio State. Like, the volleyball program needs to get better. I think everybody knows that. I think Chris Thomas knows that. Josh Whitman knows that. Like, we're at that point where it has to get better. Keys to 6. Gosh. Wide receivers, probably. It's my big concern going into the spring. We had a 3-headed monster at wide receiver. Pat Bryant, Isaiah Williams, Casey Washington. If we did throw to someone else, it was Tip Ryman. And three of those four guys are gone. So you do have a quarterback back. He looked pretty good as a sophomore. You're encouraged for a step forward as a junior, but it's Pat Bryant and 1,000 unknowns. maybe you're improving the running game, maybe you're improving the offensive line. All those are to be seen. Obviously, replacing Johnny and Keith on the defensive line, well, and Denzel Daxon and others, said McConnell. So, you know, we know that's a concern, but I would say the key to getting to six wins is we have to maintain a passing attack, which we showed we could move the ball through the air last year. Now, can we do it without Ryman, without Washington, without Isaiah Williams? That was pretty quick. Good job. I'm proud of you, Robert. You're not an idiot. Don't let all these people tell you you're an idiot when you think your freaking rental car was stolen. Okay. Your top three road trip snacks and beverages. Buckle up. Okay. I shouldn't get excited to answer this. Okay. You ready? Okay. Number one beverage, hands down, unquestionable, never ending, OG, day one, Diet Mountain Dew. I've never wavered. I think I got it from my friend Derek, who drinks Diet Mountain Dew. I think that's where it started. I remember him, he lived in Champaign right after I graduated. I'd go to his place. I remember, like, after a football game or something, he'd have Diet Mountain Dew in the fridge. I think that's got me started on it. But I don't know if this is a tell. And I know some people are like, the chemicals that you're putting in. I'm not drinking a six pack. I'd have one Diet Mountain Dew per day for 30 years, probably. So when I say I need to take a drink, what do you think I'm drinking? It's Diet Mountain Dew. When they change the taste, you know, when you see the labeling on the bottle at the convenience store, great new taste. The panic that hits your body, or at least my body, like you cannot mess with this. Like, they don't do great new taste with coffee. You can't do this. So I do a cup of coffee in the morning and a Diet Mountain Dew in the afternoon. That's the caffeine I intake daily. I can't drive anywhere without a Diet Mountain. I can't go on a train without a Diet Mountain Dew. Like, when I'm trapped and I forget to bring one and I can't find one, or like I'm in parts of the country, like in California, there's a lot of Mountain Dew, and you know, you go to the thing and there's Code Red here and there's this and that, but there's no Diet Mountain Dew, it's a problem, right? I remember in California in June, I was like, found this one 7-Eleven that had Diet Mountain Dew, because I couldn't get it at the grocery store. I was in a panic. Anyway, on a road trip, I have to have a Diet Mountain Dew. It's sitting next to me right now. It is part of my life. You know how much this one was at the convenience store? $2.69 for a 24-ounce, or 20-ounce. What is that? What are we doing? Sorry. I'll stop. Number two, road trip beverage. This one is easy as well. Powerade Zero. I believe it's called Mountain Berry. Nope. Mixed Berry. The blue. The light blue Powerade Zero. 5 calories. Zero's a lie. I'm going to call it Powerade 5. Powerade Zero. It is my... I'm golfing. It is my... I just mowed the lawn and I'm really thirsty. Powerade Zero. It is my road trip. Need a beverage sitting next to me. My list here for beverages is like 1, 2, and then like a long line till number 5. Because that's my two. I can't remember the last time I went to a convenience store or any store, and I'm not kidding, like years. I can't remember the last time I bought anything other than water, Powerade Zero, or Diet Mountain Dew. So I guess I have to, water would be number three. Like a thing of water. When I'm on a road trip, those are the only three things. Since I moved to Champaign, I bet I have not taken a road trip with any beverage sitting next to me besides those three. Water, Diet Mountain Dew, Powerade Zero, Berry, Mixed Berry, Mountain Berry Blast. Why am I thinking Mountain Berry? Mixed Berry. I think it's Mixed Berry. Light Blue. There's your three beverages. Snacks. Oh, folks. I can give you snacks. I guess you didn't ask fast food, because I have this whole... There's a podcast I did with Ryan, for you paniacs out there. Maybe I'll go find it and link it. Where we did a... He does this thing called Bag of Six. And we did our top six road trip foods. So I had things like, you know, he grabbed the Crunch Wrap because it's all wrapped up and you can eat it so easily while driving. I do remember on that one of mine was combos, and so that's going on my list here. I go cheddar cheese pretzel combos. It's the orangish, yellowish bag. I don't go for the pizza combos. I don't go for any of the new stuff. Just straight up pretzel cheddar cheese combos. It's the easiest road trip snack. It's weird. I don't snack as much as I used to. Doesn't look like it. I don't snack as much. I don't know why. I was thinking that the other day. Like, do you just stop snacking when you're in your 50s? Like, I've been in this, like, meals and no snacks roll for a while. I don't know why. Maybe I should snack, because maybe I'm eating too much at meals. And I should, like, knock that down a little bit when I'm snacking. Anyway. I think combos has to be on there. I mean, regular Ruffles has to be on there. Yeah, if it's chip, it's one of those two. Like, I'll go combos, cheddar cheese pretzel, or I'll go just your regular old salty Ruffle. It's my guy. It's my snack. And then I need to go with a sweet. Because there are sometimes... I'm driving late at night and I need something. Oh, this is easy. My road trip, need to keep myself awake, want something sweet. This bit of honey. You know it for extracting several molars from your mouth at some point. Hard to chew. Leaves that damn juice in your mouth that's so good. God, that's kind of gross. Bit of honey. It's a great road trip snack. You get a chew on it forever. Then it's stuck to your teeth. You get like 6 miles of getting the last bit of honey out of your teeth. Tastes like it sounds, bit of honey. I don't even know what it is. Toffee? No, I mean taffy? Is it taffy? I don't know what it is. Bit of honey. God, that was fun. Okay, so let's recap. We are going Diet Mountain Dew, Light Blue Powerade Zero, water, bottled water for $6, bit of honey, plain Ruffles, combos, cheddar cheese, and pretzel. Shout out to it. Okay, let's get to more questions. Thoughts on high knees ref? Can we expand this? Has he ever said why he does it? I don't understand it. Obviously, a showman. There was a moment last night. I think it was on the crazy Terrence Shannon falling out of bounds, made the layup and won. I don't know if I have this right, because I think it was a different ref who maybe called the foul. It seemed to me like he blew his whistle when pointing to the scorer's table of, like, that was good, like, count the basket. I think he emphatically, like, got so into the motion of count the basket that he blew his whistle at the same time. It was hilarious to me. But I don't know if that was that, or if he was just, like, trying to get the scorer's table's attention right now. Like, nope, you need to see this. That was good. Anyway. that's aside. Overall, it's weird. I almost tweeted this last night. Because, like, with Larry Serrato now, he's now the chief of police in Pittsburgh and no longer an NCAA ref, if you haven't known that. Less games from Kelly Pfeiffer, not sure why. We don't see DJ as much, although we've seen him a decent amount. Carsonson. Yeah, it's a ref turnover year. A lot of Don Daly, who's mostly been a Big East and ACC ref. A ton of high knees. Yeah, it's just, it's kind of weird. You know, I was used to the old days of Bo Borowski, and then you had your, you would get your Larrys, and you would get your Kelly Pfeiffers and everything else. And it just feels like a big turnover this year with a lot of newer guys. So high knees is a little too dramatic for me. I don't know why he runs down the court like that. He's obviously a let's see the outcome of that shot and then decide whether to call it, which, as I've written before, maybe compared to you, I don't hate it as much. I don't mind a balanced, that was right on the edge of a foul. If it didn't affect the shot, we'll let it count. If it did affect the shot, we're going to send him to the line. I don't mind that level of game management in the head of an official. I'm not as hard-lined, like, if it's a foul, it's a foul. I give them a little grace to manage a game like that. So I don't get as annoyed by things like that. But I haven't given a full read to it yet. Don Daly's the one that I just don't like the emotion he shows of when he's running in to, like, change a call or whatever. It's just a little too much for me. So my ref radar is way up on Don Daly this year, and not really anyone else that I can think of. Let's keep going. With Ty Rogers contributing 13 and 10 last night, what is this team's ceiling if he can be consistently productive night in, night out? You don't know this, but I've been behind a tractor trailer. Well, behind a car behind a tractor trailer. Passing another tractor trailer for approximately 11 minutes. At this point, I'm of the belief that, like, this little Ford Focus that's in front of me, who was very obviously so incredibly annoyed by that tractor trailer not moving out of the way, it has to be intentional, right? Like, I'm guessing that trucker looked in his mirror, saw this little Ford Focus, like, zipping left and right, like, what are you doing? Why aren't you passing? And is like, okay, I will take the next 9 minutes to pass this guy. Just because you annoyed me right now. Maybe he's got a camera on the back or something. Anyway, it has to be intentional. There's no way it takes that long to pass another truck. It just, you just, like, hit the gas, right? Or, like, gear down, whatever. You could accelerate to pass them if you wanted. You just don't want to. And I blame the little Ford Focus. Just talking about a car type makes me think Nissan Altima, and makes me think, you just freaking reported to the police a car stolen that only existed in your mind. God, I'm just not smart. What was the question? I forgot the question. I have no idea. Ty Rogers. And with Ty Rogers contributing 13-10 last night, what's this team's ceiling? I mean, obviously, it's higher. But I don't want to scold the question. It's just like every fan has asked that question. The question of, oh God, if everybody could be on, what kind of team? And it just never happens. The point is to have eight guys that can give you something, because three are going to have games where they don't. Quincy Guerrier has been off the last 2-3 games. We got that one game from Luke Goody where he hit a ton of threes. This person's up, that person's down. The key to any great team is that. More than it is, gosh, if Rodgers can be like this and we can get Coleman back and Gary, like, whenever I've had those thoughts, if we could just get, and then those, and if those two, Damask and Shannon could both score 23 every game, I've chased those thoughts my whole life, and it never really happens like that. Like, the only example I can think is you would have games where Darren, D, Augie, Roger, and Luther were all on at the same time and we were unbeatable. That was an example of, you know, what you're talking about. But that's because that team was so consistent. And that's why they were undefeated until the championship game. Or until the Ohio State game. And I'll move on. Just like my body hits that season, it just still has the reactions that it had 19 years ago of, like, we were right there, could have won a title. So close. I think the key to this team is the seven main guys, and hopefully, after what we saw last night, Dane as the eighth guy. Getting five of the eight, having a great game. Yes, Ty's 13-10. Underwood chuckling afterwards. Yeah, guard him with a center. We'll post him up. There's a definite plus to Ty being that kind of a player. I don't think as a sophomore it could be expected that he's going to start producing that game in, game out. It's more a matter of, well, against Northwestern, there were only maybe three guys that had great games. We need five. And I'm not going to expect seven or eight to have all great games at the same time. Damask is going to have moments where the turnaround isn't dropping. You know, everybody's going to have different moments. Coleman off night last night. But I think the key is getting all of those, getting a little more from other guys like Goody and Danger. So you have this, like, okay, Guerrier obviously doesn't have it tonight. Let's go heavy with more Goody kind of thing. So that's how I answer that question, is I don't expect, you know, yes, if Rodgers was 13-10 every night, that's huge. The guy bringing the ball up the court, leading you in rebounds, that's huge. The putback dunk, God, we need to see more of that. But my thought when asked that question is to look at the entire roster and say, like, let's get a little more depth, please. Maybe even Moretti and DGL, or even Hansberry now that he's healthy, so that we have as many options as we need, because these guys are going to have off nights. This is not 2005 when you're getting consistent night in, night out. How far along are we here? Hour 20? That's interesting. Okay. Since the transfer portal ramped up, I find myself having a hard time getting excited for Illini basketball year to year. But I do not seem to be having the same issue with getting excited for football year to year. Do you share a similar view, or is it different from you? That is one of the best from the highway questions I've received. Because it is something I have observed. It's something friends have reported to me, like, man, it's just not the same. And it does happen more with basketball than football. Here is my likely very long explanation for that. In basketball, we always had this process, right? We always had a we were just used to this, and then the next guy comes along. I wrote about this when Curbelo and Miller transferred. Because it was like, I think I just wrote it even last year. Maybe in the off season before last year. We were used to this pace over the years, especially if you're an older fan. You remember the 80s and 90s and 2000s. We were just used to this pace of you'd start to see some good things from the younger guys, and you know that that's what you'll see in the future. Where you see Hansberry get the and one when he saw the lane open last night, and you're like, there's our peak. You know, maybe those and ones we're going to see in the next 3 years. And there was this just cycle to it all where you were so pleased with what you were seeing the glimpses of, because you knew that was what the future looked like. Now, Monty Hansberry could enter the portal after the year, you know, with people pushing the NCAA on this multiple transfer rule. If the NCAA loses that, Hansberry could play for four teams in 4 years. You know, the NCAA initially wanted this to be one free transfer. After that, you have to sit out to prevent four teams in 4 years. But it looks like they're going to lose that battle. And that means every team is new every year. So I totally understand how in football, I think only the junkies would be like, oh man, did you see the freshman tight end on that kickoff coverage? You know, in football, it wasn't, like, the portal changes haven't affected, because you're used to looking at your program and see all the new numbers every year. And that's the same for good programs and bad programs. There's just a constant turnover. There's 22 positions. There's a lot of numbers you're going to have to learn year in, year out. Some of them are nameless positions at the offensive line or defensive line or whatever. They're not hearing their name for an interception or a touchdown catch or whatever. And you're just used to that flow of, yeah, that's here's the 2025 team, and here's the 20, you know, you get excited when a freshman is really good, and Gabe Akis was awesome in 2022, and you do have that, you know, we've always had that feeling of like, oh gosh, we got more years of him. That's now threatened in the same way. You know, each offseason, it's like, you know, big-time programs are going to want an athlete like that. Can we hang on to him? So it's part of football, too, now. But I agree with the sentiment that it has, the portal has detracted from what basketball feels like way more than it has changed what football feels like. And that's probably just as simple as 13 scholarships in basketball and 85 in football. So you learn those 13 guys well, and you watch them develop. And football, you know, even in the old days, 5-7 guys would leave, just natural attrition, and you weren't paying that much attention to who's coming in, who's coming out. It's just learning the team on the field each year. So I think that's what you're reporting in this question. I think that's what you're reacting to. Like, I mean, I've written about this many times, but basketball recruiting, it's completely different. Like, it doesn't even, it's not even the same thing. I used to spend so much time in the summer reading reports from the Peach Jam and, you know, who is he setting up visits? Oh, 5 visits, and are we going to get one of them in the fall? And, you know, I just think back to driving to Louisville to attend Quentin Snyder's press conference, and Casey picked Illinois, and then that same night the news drops that Cliff Alexander has set an official visit for late October, and like, basketball recruiting was so much. Now I barely pay attention. I just, like, it's not that, like, I agree in that Jeremiah Fears, okay? I don't, this will sound like inflammatory. Like, if Jeremiah Fears gets to his junior year here, I think it'll be All-American level. He's a talented guard. He would work very well in Underwood system, this and that. But none of us here can sit here and say that a 2025 recruit who won't arrive on campus for another 18 months will then make it to that junior year where he has the breakout season. You know, I followed John Gross recruiting Demetrius Jackson, who went to Notre Dame. I remember finding out that Jackson had set his commitment announcement for, like, the Notre Dame student radio station or something like that. I remember the devastation of finding that out. Of, like, he's down to these two. He's the guard of our dreams. He's who we need. And I was just devastated when he picked Notre Dame. And then when he came in the Big Ten ACC Challenge as a junior and picked us apart and won the game by himself, we all saw what we could have had if D-Jax had picked Illinois over Notre Dame instead of Notre Dame over Illinois. Because of the portal, I wouldn't have that same reaction now. To be quite honest, if he picked Notre Dame, I would be like, okay, well, maybe we can get him on the rebound. You know, maybe he doesn't get playing time as a freshman, and we can just get him when he's entering that, you know, he's going to be, like, decent as a freshman, much better as a junior, and then maybe All-American, or much better as a sophomore, and maybe All-American as a junior. So let's align ourselves to be his choice if he wants to leave Notre Dame. You know, and so losing a recruit doesn't matter to me as much as it used to. I don't have the feelings of, oh, man, that was our chance. And it's just not the same. I don't follow anything in the summer. It just seems like that player is so far from being Justin Harmon, being Marcus Damask. You know what I mean? Like, there's just such a long distance between when that player is 22 years old and is a high-level, productive player in college. To get him to that point is just so... I mean, look, I'll just say the stat again. Coleman Hawkins is the first recruit who entered Illinois as a freshman recruited by Brett Underwood who will finish his career in Illinois. He inherited Trent and DeMonte from John Gross. They were both Gross recruits. And they played out their full careers here. But every other player he's recruited, and we're talking, what, 20, 30 some players? Some were JUCOs, this and that. Coleman Hawkins is the first to enter as a freshman and graduate as a senior after 4 years playing for Underwood. That's just college basketball now. You know? It's weird. And I get why people aren't drawn to it. I thought about it last night looking at that crowd. I thought about it when I was tweeting about, like, okay, if I've seen crowds under 8 in person at Michigan, in person at Ohio State, under 8,000 people in the stadium, on Twitter in the shots of the Iowa crowd last week for their Maryland game, how much is this part of that? Right? It has to be. I have friends who say, it's not the same for me, man. Like, does anyone understand it breaks my heart when Adam Miller says, I'll go elsewhere? You know, like, does anyone remember how we invested we get into the individual players? And I get it. You know, for me, I cover the team. I'm driving back from Columbus right now. I've built this scenario where I'm always going to, like, every player out there, I'm going to cover it. I'm going to, you know, I think I built a scenario where I can't lose that kind of thing. It's just part of my, such a heavy part of my life that I have no option but to stay invested in every player who picks on them. But for the people who say, this isn't the same for me, and I just, a side note here, I'd like to apologize for everyone who, any of the other questions that I'm not getting to, because I know this is my last question, because I want to end on this. I just understand what people are saying when they view college basketball differently. The Big Ten's strength has always been crowds, and it has always been, you know, if you compare the Midwest sports fan to the coast sports fan, East Coast, West Coast, that's why Illinois will draw 14,000 people and, I don't know, pick USC draws 6,700 or something, you know, whatever. Like, the reason it's always been like that is there's this way of fandom. I think you even see it in professional teams with the Packers, if you will, or the Chiefs, or, you know, there's this Midwestern kind of, these are our guys, that doesn't really exist on the coasts. You know, it's different from the fanatical football fans in the South, where it's the sport that's in their blood and the pageantry of Texas A&M Yell practice, or, you know, the Grove at Ole Miss, or whatever, rolling trees at Auburn. There's this whole, you know, that's a culture, right? Basketball in the Midwest, your Indiana, even if you dip a little in the South for your Kentucky, your Kansas, and even all the Big Ten teams that all eventually built stadiums that seat 15,000. It's this thing where the players were part of your family, man. Like, it wasn't this jersey culture of, like, you know, I'm going to buy this jersey. It was like this, I don't know how to describe it. Like, when I was a kid, Ken Norman was my freaking hero. Like, hero. When we lost to Austin Peay, and I knew that not only were we out of the tournament and Dick Vitale was going to stand on his head, but Ken Norman was done playing basketball. Like these were, like, emotional connections. And he was a JUCO guy. Like, he didn't play full 4 years. You know, my attachment to the 89 team, and again, I was 15, 16 years old, so it's just that prime of Kenny Battle as Nick Anderson and Kendall Gill are everything to me, and I'm in the backyard pretending to be them. But I can see how all that Midwestern built up here's how we got here, here's how we cheer for our teams, really takes a hit when Adam Miller goes LSU, what, Arizona State or whatever, and Curbelo goes Illinois, St. John's, Southern Miss. Like, Bello, after his freshman year, was set for this crazy superstardom. And when we see all of those consistently fall away, and Coleman being the only player to survive 4 years, and even when you see Brad Underwood try to recruit Terrence Shannon and Quincy Guerrier and not get Shannon until his fourth year and not get Guerrier until his fifth year, you know, when there's still this option to maybe go get that recruit later, you know, it just changes things, right? I all of this answer is to say, I get it, man. Like, I seriously get it when people are like, what is missing here? You know? And I hate to say it, but it's just gonna be different like that from here on out. It's why I was always, like, hesitant with the NCAA hate. And when I saw all of that, oh, NCAA just wants to just crap on its players and, like, they don't care about... Right. But, like, I just want to remind everyone what the model is here, the amateur model. And you're really arguing for the amateur model to go away. And if the amateur model does go away, the stuff we're talking about here, the stuff we care about, the stuff that's like we're in, that makes us invest, that kind of goes away too. And it's going to be different. And I mean, I'll still be okay with it, and it's still my team, and I'm still wearing a bright orange shirt right now. But I don't know. It's never going to be what it was. And I think one of those questions is now for Ohio State. Like, I mean, Ohio State fans were in my mentions this morning saying, move back to St. John Arena. This is pointless. We shouldn't have ever built this monstrosity. Just move back. Give us the environment. We don't need a bigger arena. We're never going to have a crowd that big anyway. If we do, we'll just go play that game across the street. Like, move back. I get that. Like, 4 years ago, you said that to me. I'm like, what are you talking about? This is ridiculous. And now, with how things have trended, I get it. I'm not saying Ohio State should do it, or they shouldn't. But I get how an NBA arena with transfer basketball players does not bring the same emotions for Ohio State fans who would otherwise invest into their program, which leaves them just with, if we win, I'll show up. If not, spring football's 4 weeks away. You know, just a shoulder shrug toward their team. It's one of the reasons I was so, don't build a new building. Please stay with the State Farm Center, Assembly Hall. My memories of the spaceship go back to childhood, and that connection needs to remain, I think. Purdue fans and Mackey, Indiana fans and the other Assembly Hall, you know, there's a certain part to that. Yeah, I get it. I'll just say that. That was a long way to ramble around and come back to just a very simple... It's different, and it's palpable. And with the Big Ten changing next year and football being king, there is a Big Ten basketball problem. It's not dying. It's not going to go away. But with all of these changes, there's a certain issue that the conference as a whole needs to talk about. Because that one thing that led to all those massive arenas has slipped a bit, and I'm not sure how that returns. And I'm sure some of you were thinking, and the game was on Peacock last night, you know, like, the TV is splintered, the officials have splintered, the guys we hate for officials that were Big Ten officials, now there's Big East guys we don't know, and ACC guys we don't know, and the crowds are smaller, and the game's not on TV, and it's streaming, and you have to answer the phone from your dad who doesn't understand how to watch it, and there's just a lot that has taken a little bite out of Big Ten basketball, and what Ohio State fans voiced last night was a very strong, look, man, you can't put all that in front of us and expect us to show up. We're just going to wait for spring football. And that's where we're at. Okay. How much time? What are we at? Hour 40. That's not bad. That's pretty good. I have to go to the bathroom anyway because I drink a lot of Diamond Dew. So, thank you for listening. Sorry I'm an idiot. I hope that this podcast meant that you are entertained by my idiocy, because I am dumb. I'm in my rental car and I'm driving back to Champaign for my number 14 team. Just knocked off Ohio State. 7-3 in the Big Ten. And I feel pretty good. Go Illini.